78. Their different drummer. "My purse," she said as they drove back to Bobby's. "It's not in back," craning around the seat.
"Sure you didn't give it to our dustman?"
"No, it was right there, beside the tripod."
Gareth wanted to give the tripod to the friend who'd arranged the studio for them. It was a good one, he'd said, and his friend was a photographer. Everything else had been passed to his dustmen, who'd been waiting in the parking lot, two men in a concrete-spattered pickup who were being paid to see that it became part of a warehouse foundation they were pouring that morning.
"I'm sorry," he said, "but we really can't go back."
She thought of Big End's scrambler, which she didn't mind losing at all, but then she remembered the money from Jimmy.
Shit.
But then, strangely, she found she was glad to be done with that as well. Something oppressive about it. Wrong. Otherwise, aside from her phone, the scrambler, the keys to the phaeton and the flat, her license and her single credit card, there was only some makeup, a flashlight, and some mints. Her passport, she remembered now, was back at Big End's.
"They must have taken it by mistake," he said, "but that was strictly a one-way transaction. Sorry."
She considered telling him about the GPS tracker, but decided not to.
"Don't worry about it."
"Were your car keys in your purse?" he asked as they turned off Clark.
"Yes. It's parked up the street and around the corner, here, behind a dumpster, just before you get to your alley."
She'd just seen a tall figure in black getting out of a small blue car parked behind the opalescent bulk of the Blue Ant phaeton.
"Who's that?"
"Heidi," she said.
As he drove past the blue car and the phaeton, she saw Inchmail straighten up on the other side, bearded and more balding than she remembered him.
"And Inchmail."
"Reg Inchmail? Seriously?"
"Past the alley," she said. "Pull over here."
He did.
"What's going on?"
"I don't know, but I'd better get them out of here. I don't know what you still have to do, but I'll bet there's something. I'll get them to rescue me. I think that's probably what they're here for."
"Actually," he said, "that's a good idea."
"How do I get back in touch with you?"
He handed her a phone.
"Don't use it to call anyone else. I'll call you when things are a bit more sorted on our end."
"Okay," she said, and was out of the car, running back along the sidewalk to intercept a biker-jacketed Heidi Hyde striding toward her with some sort of 3-foot paper-wrapped club in her hand. She heard the van pull away behind her.
"What's going on?"
demanded Heidi, tapping the palm of her hand with the gift-wrapped club.
"We're getting out of here," Hollis said, passing her. "How long have you been here?"
"Just got here," said Heidi, turning.
"What's that?" indicating the club.
"An axe handle."
"Why?"
"Why not?"
"There she is,"
Inchmail said, around the stub of a small cigar as they reached the blue car.
"Where the hell have you been?"
"Get us out of here, Reg, now."
"Isn't that your car?"
pointing at the phaeton.
"I've lost the keys,"
pulling at the rear door of the blue car.
"Will you please unlock this?"
It unlocked.
"Take me somewhere,"
she said, getting in.
"Now."
"Your purse," said Big End, "is near the intersection of Main and Hastings, heading south on Main, currently. On foot, apparently."
"It must have been stolen," she said. "Or found. How fast can you get Ollie over here with a spare set of keys?"
She'd told him, at the start of the conversation, that she was in this particular bar. Otherwise, she realized, she'd have had to worry.
"Almost instantly. You're very near the flat. I know the place. They make a very decent piso mojado."
"Have him bring the keys. I'm not feeling like sitting around in a bar."
She closed Inchmail's phone and handed it back to him.
"He says you should try the piso mojado," she said.
Inchmail raised an eyebrow.
"Do you know that that means wet floor?"
"Hush a minute, Reg. I need to think."
According to Big End, he'd ordered Ollie away when she'd told him to, shortly before midnight, from the live-work building on Powell Street. The GPS unit in the scrambler, Big End had said, had remained there for about 15 minutes, then had headed west. From its speed, obviously in a vehicle. A bus, Big End guessed, because it had made a number of brief stops that weren't at intersections. She imagined him watching this on that huge screen in his office, the world as video game. He'd assumed, he'd said, that this had been her, headed back to the flat, but then the GPS telltale had gone walkabout, through what Ollie told him was the poorest per capita postal code in the country. She had already decided, she knew, for reasons as powerfully visceral as they were mysterious, that she wanted nothing more to do with either Jimmy Carlyle's 50-hundreds or Big End's bugged scrambler.
"Phone," she said to Inchmail, "and a Visa card."
He put his phone on the table in front of her and dug out his wallet. "If you're making a purchase, I'd rather you use that Amex. That's the one for business expenses."
"I need their 800 number to report my card stolen," she said.
Ollie arrived while she was dealing with Visa, which kept her from having to speak with him. Inchmail was good at getting rid of people like Ollie, who left, quickly.
"Drink up," she said, indicating Inchmail's Belgian beer. "Where's Heidi?"
"Chatting up the bartender," he said. Hollis leaned out of their white vinyl booth and spotted Heidi in conversation with the blonde behind the bar. Inchmail had insisted on her leaving the axe handle in their blue Honda rental.
"What are you doing here?" she asked him. "I mean, I appreciate that you've come to make sure I'm okay, but how did you get to where you found me?"
"The Bollards weren't ready to go into the studio, it turned out. Two of them had flu. I called Blue Ant a number of times. They aren't really in the book. Then I had to get through to Big End himself, which was like reverse engineering every ordinary concept of corporate structure. When I got him, though, he was all over me."
"He was?"
"He wants Hard to Be One for a Chinese car commercial. To run globally, I mean. Only the car is Chinese. He hadn't heard it for a while. Seeing you jogged his memory. Swiss director, $15 million budget."
"For a car commercial?"
"They need to make an impression."
"What did you say?"
"No, of course. The foot you always start with, right? No." But then he segued into this really interesting textured bullshit about how concerned he was about you up here in Vancouver. James Bond shit in the company car. You weren't checking in. Why didn't I take the Blue Ant Lear up in about 15 minutes and check on you?"
"So you did?"
"Not immediately. I don't like being gamed, and your man's all game." Hollis nodded. "I was having lunch with Heidi. I ran it by her. And, of course, she bit. Became worried about you. And I caught it then, even though I could see that it would be to his advantage to get us both up here. Bit of harmless adventure. Then he'd pitch it to the two of us."
"Pitch what?"
"The Chinese car commercial. He wants us to re-record Hard to Be One with different lyrics. Chinese car lyrics. But I was getting this second-hand paranoia off our different drummer over there. So then she and I are in her car headed for Burbank. I think it took us longer to drive to Burbank than it took the plane to get up here. I had my passport, she had her driver's license, and we both got here with what we were standing up in."
"And she bought an axe handle?"
"We got to that neighborhood where you'd left the car, and she didn't like it. I said she was misreading it completely, missing the cultural subtexts, and that it wasn't actually dangerous, not that way. But she stopped at a lumberyard and tooled up. Didn't offer me one."
"It wouldn't suit you."
She reached under her jacket and scratched her ribs, hard.
"Come on, I need a shower. I was where there was ground glass earlier. And cesium."
"Cesium?" She stood, picking up the two blank white cards that Ollie had left.